Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Oral arguments at the Indiana Court of Appeals are described as rare, but frequently granted when one side asks for them. One side here is asking. The other side would clearly rather the panel, you know, this just sits in a file room somewhere. That split, who wants to be in the room and who doesn't, might be the loudest signal yet about how this appeal is actually positioned. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is with Robin and myself as we continue to break down the chaos of Richard Allen's chaos. Delphi case. Bob, the defense filed for oral arguments. The state did not. One side wants to stand in front of three judges. And you said earlier in our conversation, it's probably going to happen, but it's brief. The other would rather, you know, they decided on paper. Where does this take us? What is the timeline going forward for oral arguments, if they're to take place? And just kind of give us an idea of really next steps here. Where could we possibly be turning the pages in this choose your own adventure book in the coming months?
So ultimately, what's going to happen is the briefs have been all submitted. It's fully briefed. That's how they define it at this point. All the briefs are done. Now the justices they're going to be sitting on this case are reading them. And at some point in the next probably 2 months, they'll set an oral argument date. And people that I, you know, I'm friendly with that practice in Indiana are telling me early fall is when we can expect to have the oral arguments take place. And then once oral arguments happen, it could be another 2, 3, 4 months after that before we get an opinion or a decision on it. So, I mean, I think we're talking earliest, maybe around Christmas, you know, that we get some kind of decision on this thing. And, you know, and then what happens is if the appellate court turns around and says, okay, well, you know, we hear you. You know, there were some good arguments that were made by the defense. However, we're hanging our hat on waiver. You know, if we didn't find that your arguments were compelling enough, that you waived all these issues, unfortunately, we don't have to get to the merits. So
if they make that decision, why? Is it convenience? Is it because they're wanting to really parse out the letter of the law and get to the truth here? Or how are they making their choice on this if, in fact, they just side with the state and say, no, everything's great, even clearly when it has not? Is it just another court punting it down to the next court so it goes to the Supreme Court so they don't have to deal with it? Sort of like we saw earlier on in this when it went to, what's her name? Shortly after Gull. I can't think of her name. Where it's just, we're going to punt this down to the next court. I'm not going to truly deal with any of this myself.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it would be, you know.
Do we have all these courts if nobody wants to do their freaking jobs?
I mean, that's a million-dollar question.
It's, you know, unfortunately, this, now we'll go to the laws of human nature here. I've been inside, and I know Bob's been around these government types too. I don't care whether it's local, state, or federal. You know, I dealt with an entire career of, you have some people that are doing the righteous work because it's the right thing to do, because it's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, you also have people that are, everything's a dichotomy, right? A dichotomy between self and others. Those that are balancing hardcore on others, which is the righteous work about, you know, good processes, good law, good procedures, because it wants to be just, it wants to be fair. Those are people doing the righteous work. But these people are also balancing it with self, career, relationships, preservations of titles, positions, promotions. And when you have the self outweighing the other, That's when this shit happens. That's why it keeps getting punted sometimes. Now, granted, if it's a righteous punt because it's the right process, procedure, oh, great. But a lot of times I've been around this. I've had to strategize operational improvement for things, basically waiting because I knew this guy would approve it, but not execute it because it would potentially damage his career. He'd wait for the next guy to come in who can then blame the last guy, but could take action on it and then blame the last guy. I mean, inside government, you're constantly working the dichotomies of people and trying to figure out where they are. And that's unfortunately how the sausage is made on some of these cases. And unfortunately, it looks like it might be going on here. Not accusing anyone of anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's gospel, you know, and ultimately, I mean, I'm going to feel a certain kind of way if they end up punting it on the waiver bullshit. You know, it's one thing for them to get to the merits and then, you know, uphold the conviction. At least there they did the work. You know, at least I thought that was, I could say, all right, well, I disagree, but it was an intellectually honest attempt at addressing the issues. If they punted based on the waiver, I don't feel like that. I'm like, wow, man, like they just took the easy way out. They won't even get to the things that matter about this case, the things that actually have substance, the things that we need to address moving forward in the criminal justice system. Like, these are things that have to be looked at because we need to figure out whether or not if these things are happening during a pretrial and a trial, does it amount to a person getting a fair trial? Like, if you don't get to those issues, you're never going to get an answer in this case. So, but again, like I base a lot of what I say in terms of how they operate in Indiana, in terms of the appellate court, based on what lawyers that I respect a whole hell of a lot that practice in that state are telling me what to expect. And I have, there's some varying opinions. You know, one of my favorite lawyers there, she's of the opinion that she thinks that the appellate court might do the right thing here. My other friend, who I really, really respect as well, he thinks that ultimately it's going to get kicked up to the Indiana Supreme Court and they're going to be the ones to do the right thing. Both of them feel, having both practiced in habeas work and appellate law in Indiana for a very long time and have been very successful at it, feel that this thing has a really good shot at getting him a new trial. They both feel like that, and they understand the politics that surround this case, mm-hmm. because that's a part of this piece of the puzzle that you cannot forget exists.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got Todd Rokita, who's the attorney general. They have a vested interest in keeping this conviction in place.
Yeah.
You know, the state of Indiana has a vested interest in keeping this conviction in place. The prosecutor's office in Carroll County has a vested interest. You know, Indiana State Police, they all want this conviction to stick.
This is a great example of the state as a whole working in tandem together.
It's like, that's what I'm always telling people. That is the government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever I'm screaming about the government, it's them. It's all of those people.
And what's interesting is,
and Bob, you hit it. So go ahead, Tony. What's interesting is
all these different parts and pieces seemingly working together harmoniously to keep Richard Allen at bay and the truth of the story at bay, because it doesn't benefit them. It's amazing, quite honestly, because the government never can do that. They can never keep all their plates spinning, but they keep doing it because they all have a vested interest in the truth not coming out and Richard Allen not suing the living shit out of all of them. And making millions of dollars at the end of the day, which could very likely happen. I kind of feel like they're more so weighing him out to death, where, well, he's already mentally compromised. Let's put him here. Let's not let anybody see him. Let's not talk about him. And eventually he'll die. And when he dies, well, no, yeah, the odds of us having to face the consequences for any of this or be held accountable significantly go down. Or if we do, it's significantly lower than what it would be if there's not the media circus of him walking out of prison one day and into a mansion with millions of dollars that he'll have because of the wrongful conviction. It just seems a scratch your back, I'll scratch mine is alive and well through the departments of Indiana.
Robin, I know you had some.
Yeah, no, because I just want to highlight the beautiful phrase you keep saying on a lot of our shows, Bob, and that is, do the work. You know, and that's the simplest test ever. If someone can poke this many holes in what was done, then you didn't do the work. And when someone's life is on the line and their freedom is on the line, shame on you for not doing the work. That is complete laziness and self-centered. Because think about this. Why wouldn't someone want to do the work? Because it impacts them.
Oh, God, and dude.
It's spot on. It was just the simplest phrase ever. And if you don't want to do the work, get the F out of the job because you're not meant for it.
If he gets a new trial, which I am of the firm belief he absolutely deserves, and he is walked, if he's found not guilty, because what happens in appeal is those errors that they made the first time are fixed. So that means a third party culprit defense comes in. That means that if they're going to allow these confessions, if they find that they were actually voluntary and they allow some of them in, and they say, okay, but here's the thing, the one where the defense was trying to get in through the completeness doctrine, the phone call that preceded the one where he's saying, I feel like I'm in Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, you mean context?
Yeah, the context of everything, you know, and they're like, but we're going to play that before they hear the rest of it. You know, because we're talking about hundreds of hours and they cherry picked, you know, maybe 5 minutes mm-hmm. of sound out of hundreds of hours of whatever Richard Allen was rambling about, which obviously include things about shooting the girls and the girls weren't shot, you know, about starting World War III, about, you know, like all the terrible yeah. things that he was just puking out of his diseased mind. None of that was heard by the jury, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it'll ever will be. But if all of the issues are fixed and he gets a fair trial and he's walked out by a not guilty, imagine the abject horror that the state of Indiana, that the Indiana State Police, that the prosecutors, mm-hmm. that all of those people are going to be feeling, because when the Patty family comes in knocking and they're mm-hmm. saying, hey, they walked him. Like, I thought you told me he was the right guy. We believed he was the right guy. Who are we going after now?
Yep.
And you know what? They're going to have victims. To throw their hands up, because they can't turn around and go after the Brad Holders and the Elvis Fields, because they're on record saying they didn't do it. We investigated that thoroughly. They have fucked this case up beyond all recognition from beginning to end. And the people that are paying the price, ultimately, if that happens, are the victims' families.
Yep, victims'
families. Which I've been screaming about since the day I started covering.
100%.
And the people on the other side, the murder sheet fucks and the prosecutors tried to turn it on me like, oh, he doesn't, like, he's supporting a child. No, I'm trying to explain to people that deserve to know, because the prosecutors aren't explaining to them that the process is being bastardized. What they're doing now, what the judge is doing now, is not the way it's supposed to work. And ultimately what this is going to result in is a second trial that you're going to have to sit through. And God forbid that it goes through from your perspective, because you bought what you've been sold by the state. Most victims' families do. The law enforcement comes to them. The prosecutor comes to them and says, hey, like, we got the guy. This is on lock. Like, I want you to rest easy. You have nothing to worry about. We've done the work here. This is the person. They're going to pay the price for what they did to your girls. And they believe it. People need to be able to believe that. They have to.
Yep.
And when that turns out to not be the case, it's a nightmare scenario. And like, this, you want to kill the messenger, and me being the messenger, that something stinks about this case. I don't know how long I had to say that something stinks in Delphi for it to finally hit the mark with somebody. Because I've asked every single person that's on the opposite side of this thing to come onto my show and debate me. Let's go. I've got the facts on my side. You've got a bunch of just narrative-driven drivel that's not actual evidence of a crime being committed by this individual. And it's that simple.
Because you did the work, Bob. You're doing the work, and they're not. There you go.
Yeah, it's a frustrating case for me. But all wrongful conviction cases are frustrating for me. Because you have people, there are actually, again, people that exist in the world that don't think that wrongful convictions are a thing, which is so fucking bizarre to me.
Yeah. I'm like,
we're talking about, you know, police departments where guys went to an academy for 6 months, maybe. Maybe they have a bachelor's degree. We're not talking about like armies of monks and Columbos out there that are solving cases, man. Like, yeah. It's not how this shit works.
It's like somebody saying, fire's not hot. It just makes my marshmallows toasty. like no, it's fucking hot. You just didn't put your hand in it yet. Wow. Your thoughts in the comment section in Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in on this. And of course, we will continue to cover this as it continues to evolve. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Go check it out. And his other podcast,
Buried, Inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation. It's a good one.
It's available wherever you get podcasts. Go check it out. Bob's podcast and also on YouTube. Go check it out. And Robin Drake, It's Not All About Me, his latest book. Go and check it out. Available wherever books are sold.
And leave a review, please.
Yes, and leave a review, too. And for me, just press subscribe wherever you're listening. Greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.